Hillary Topper, and the name of my book is From Couch Potato to Endurance Athlete, a portrait of a non-athletic triathlete.
Hillary J.M. Topper, what's that?
That's my middle name and my maiden name.
Oh, okay. Hillary, I loved your book. What was it exactly that caused you to get in shape? Was there a eureka moment where you said, you know what, I can't do this couch potato thing anymore?
Yeah, I was working 60, 70, 80 hour weeks. I was going from cocktail party to cocktail party, or, you know, when I came home, I'd have a glass of wine and sit and watch TV. And I was 48 and I was turning 50 soon. And I thought, you know what? I can't do this when I'm 50. I have to change my life. And that's exactly what I did.
You almost flunked gym. I understand.
I did.
You were not athletic as a child. Is that fair to say?
Not at all. I would be picked last for every sport. And I don't even know why I would think that I would be picked first, because I couldn't catch a ball.
Well, you know what, though? In describing your family, athleticism didn't seem to be on their radar really at all. So,
not at all.
So it's not surprising that you weren't athletic. Why do you think you thought you were able to put it together that you had to move? I mean, I know that's out there, that you should be moving and all of that. But if you're not from that kind of family background, why did you think that that was a good way to go?
Yeah, I used to watch the runners on the Wantagh Parkway. And to me, they looked so graceful. It just looked like they were having so much fun. I mean, there were a few that didn't look like they were having fun. But for the most part, many of them looked like they were having such a blast. Just feeling free and out there and running and being out in the open, you know. And I thought, wow, I'd like to do that too. So that's really what my motivation was. And I started by running. And then after a couple of years of running, and I was training with a partner, we trained for the Brooklyn Half. And at that point, that was the turning point where she said, she looked, turned around after we finished, and we both PR'd that race. And she said to me, I'm done. I don't want to do these anymore. And I looked at her and said, why don't we do a triathlon? I didn't even know what a triathlon was. I just heard the term. I wasn't really sure it was swim, bike, run. I thought I knew how to swim, but I really just knew how to doggy paddle. That was my swimming experience. As for biking, I grew up in Long Beach, Long Island, and it's flat there. I mean, completely flat. A lot of learning curve.
What made you, in your head, advance from being like a weekend warrior to this competitive thing? I mean, I guess just being into your own head and into your own thing wasn't enough for you?
Well, you know, there's something about these races that are just so much fun. And it's not so much that you're competing against other people. You're competing against yourself. You're always competing against yourself, and you always want to improve yourself, no matter how old you are, no matter, you're always competing against yourself. And that was my, you know, my motivation. And then it just became an addiction. It was just like every morning I would wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and be ready to do something.
There must have been mornings when you thought to yourself, boy, it's cold. I'm going to go back under the covers. What kept you from doing that? You must have been driven.
I was driven. I was driven because I wanted to prove to myself and to everybody else that I was able to do this. This was something important to me because I was never athletic. Mm. So I wanted to prove that you could change your life. If you aren't athletic, you could change and be athletic. You know, if you never learned an instrument in school, you can always start now. There's no one stopping you.
I think that's the difference between you and a lot of other people who they let their fears and their past hold them back. But you must have had a strong motivation somewhere in there. What do you think did drive you?
I also had some traumas when I was growing up. But the one thing for me was that I always felt like people were pushing me down. And that was a motivator for me. So if somebody said to me, oh, you'll never amount to anything. Well, I went and got my, you know, my college degree, yes. and then I got my master's, and now I teach at Hofstra. And so I needed to constantly prove to everyone, including myself, that I could do this. And that was my motivating factor.
And I know your mother, I know she passed away, and I'm so sorry about that, but she figures in this story, I think, in a big way.
She was so nervous. She really didn't want me to do anything athletic. She was so nervous that I was going to get hurt. And she would constantly say to me, don't go out that fast. Don't go in the, we grew up in Long Beach. Don't go in the water past your knees, you know?
Mm.
The ocean's going to capture you and take you away. And it was really hard to overcome all of that. And I had to really dig deep. And I think that by doing these endurance activities, it helped me to come to terms with a lot of things that were unresolved, you know, especially after she passed.
It's a beautiful thing when you're able to deal with all these emotions physically as well mm-hmm. as in your head, I think. And running certainly gave you a lot of time to do that.
Absolutely. And swimming also.
And swimming and biking. I was interested, though, Hillary, that you stopped running for a short time. Well, I don't know how long. I don't remember. After Hurricane Sandy, that was pretty traumatic mm-hmm. for all of us in this area. Why do you think you did that when if you would have kept running, I think it would have helped you, don't you think?
I do. I think that it was just also logistically difficult. I mean, Long Beach was destroyed at that point, and there was nowhere to run. You know, even the track was flooded. I mean, it was just a total mess. And, you know, at that point, we couldn't get gas, and, you know, food was rationed, and it was just a very difficult time. And I feel like I was really just trying to, you know, take care of what I had and salvage what I had in the house and my family and make sure everybody was safe. And that was really my whole thing. And I probably should have run somewhere. I should have found a park somewhere, but yes.
But you know, there was probably a little itch in the back of your head, like, I got to get back to that. And you eventually did. How long did it take you to do that? Was it?
It didn't take that long. It took a few months, you know, after everything started settling down and we started getting back into our offices. And, you know, that's when I started to say, you know what, let's call up my running partner and said, let's go, let's do this. You know, let's sign up for our next adventure.
How did biking become a piece of your life? I know my husband just recently got a bike and he is so obsessed with it and into it. And I, as a result, because I want to bike with him, I am too. And it is addictive.
Yeah. Once I started to do triathlons, biking was a natural, you know, I had to really, you know, learn how to clip in and learn how to shift gears and not do a leisurely ride like I had done on the Long Beach Boardwalk, where we would go 5-7 miles an hour. Okay. Now I was, you know, riding 14, 15, 16 miles an hour, and I had to learn how to do all of that. And once I did, that feeling when you are either going downhill or when you're struggling to go uphill, or even when you're fighting the wind or when the wind is behind your back, it's just a wonderful feeling. I just absolutely love it. And I love training on the Tobe Beach, you know, Parkway, the Ocean Parkway. Mm. It's just beautiful there.
Then how did you add the swimming part of it?
Well, that was the difficult part. I you know, they were all difficult. I have to admit they were all difficult for me. Mm-hmm. But the swimming for me was that I thought I knew how to swim, and I tried swimming one lap, one time across the pool, and I could not do it without choking and throwing up. It was a disaster. And I went to an open water swim, master swim program.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the guy, the, you know, the head coach, he jumped in with me and he said to me, Hillary, you got to learn how to breathe in the water. And he sat with me and he blew bubbles with me in the water. It was really embarrassing because here I'm 53 years old at that point, or 54 or whatever. And I'm blowing bubbles with this grown man, and I, you know, and everybody else is like super athletic, but I did it. And the next thing I know, he had suggested that I buy nose plugs because I kept the water kept going up into my sinuses. Oh. It was really bad. So, and that was making me choke. And he said to me, go get yourself nose plugs. Don't even worry about what anybody says. And as it turns out, I still wear nose plugs. And it's funny because are a lot of adults that wear nose plugs. And somebody had said that to me once. They said, oh, you can wear nose plugs as an adult. Yeah, so that helped. And once I started to learn how to breathe, it all clicked. And I, last year I did the Maggie Fisher Memorial Swim, which was from Fire Island to Bayshore. It was supposed to be 5.5 miles. Mm-hmm. For me, it was around 7 miles. My son was the kayaker, but unfortunately, I didn't really realize what he'd have to do. And he had only kayaked in a pond, you know, where there's no current.
Yeah.
So he got drifted very far off course, and the volunteers had to come get us. Yeah.
Oh.
So we were like a mile and a half course.
Well, you don't do things the regular way, do you, Hillary?
No.
But that's okay. And how have your kids responded to this?
They absolutely love it. They're so proud of me. They've been so supportive throughout the whole entire journey. And I think I've also motivated them to get out there and do activities as well. My daughter and I, we've run a couple of New York Roadrunner races. My son, we've run a couple of rock and roll marathon races.
Nice.
You know, so yeah, so they definitely inspired by me, and it makes me really feel proud because I want them to feel that way. I want them to go out there and do something themselves.
Fantastic, fantastic. So why did you write the book? And is this indicative of how your journey continues from here?
Well, I wrote the book because I really wanted to help people out there who were like me, who were sitting on the couch, hanging out, watching TV, not really doing very much. And I know so many of those people. I mean, many of them are my friends. I mean, I'm very good friends. And they feel like they can't. Oh, I can never do that. But that's not true. You can do it. And I want that message to be heard, that people can do it. You can change your life no matter how old you are, no matter how heavy you are, no matter how skinny you are, no matter what you are. You can change your life if you're not happy. And I'm really happy now that I did that. And it totally makes me really happy. And in terms of my journey continues. I will see what happens in the next few years. You know, I'm now 60, so I have another good 10 years, I'm thinking, to do triathlons, and I'm hoping to do, some good stuff. So I'm excited about the future.
I just interviewed earlier this week a doctor who wrote The Great Age Reboot, and he believes that in the next 10, 20 years, that the medical science will advance so much that it'll be commonplace for people to live to 110 to 120 and even beyond that by 2050. And that our whole lives are going to have to readjust because we'll have to probably work longer in order to, finance our old age, but that being older is going to be commonplace. So you may be competing for the next 30 years.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Yeah. I actually know people. I know a man who is in my triathlon group. He is 78 years old, and he just kicks butt. He's just amazing. He does Ironman events constantly. And to me, people like that just totally inspire me. I have another woman in my group who is 75 and she did her first marathon, and people like that, it just makes me feel like I can keep going. And if I love what I do and, you know, it just makes me happy, I'm going to keep doing it.
Well, and not only that, it keeps us all from being lonely, doesn't it? And even if you're, even though you're doing it by yourself, there's a group around you and it just makes you feel, I don't know, more of the human race.
Yes,
in some ways.
Absolutely. There's an amazing triathlon community in the New York tri-state area. And everyone is so supportive of each other. We all speak the same language. And it's just, you know, you could go and if you see somebody with a Garmin watch, you know right away that they're a triathlete. Yeah. You could start a conversation with them.
That's fantastic. Anything else you want to add? You've been a great interview.
Oh, thank you so much. No, just, you know, I guess that if anybody wants to get the book, they could buy it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's also in most of the bookstores. And if they don't have it, just ask for it, From Couch Potato to Endurance Athlete.
Fantastic.